everybody, get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David, Nikki, and Nellis. We have a great show teed up for you today, but it won't come as a surprise that Nikki has some stuff she wants to talk about before we get into the show.
Well, in case you've missed it, May is absolutely madness. There are so many events on the calendar of things to do. I don't want people to forget that it is Go MoCo Month. There are all these deals and dishes and things happening there. Check it out on the site, thelistareyouonit.com.
Yeah, and if you don't know what MoCo is, it's Montgomery County.
Yes, that is also true. Cinco de Mayo is the day that this show is airing, and there are so many things happening around D.C. Check out all those fun things. Lamb Jam is happening all month. And just remember, with everything you're doing, especially this weekend because the weather is kind of wonky, that to check that the outdoor events are still happening because there were lots of postponements sort of put out last minute. And follow me at NYCCINELLIS because I'll keep you up to date on everything.
All right, so we got a very special drink segment today. James Cow is the bar supervisor at Smoke and Mirrors. And that's the very trendy rooftop restaurant atop the AC Hotel with views of Capitol Hill and the Navy Yard and all that sexy stuff. Mm-hmm. He's going to tell you how to treat yourself and friends to stunning cocktails. And he's going to make us some stunning cocktails, which is even better. So we'll be talking to him shortly. A chef owner, Johnny Sparrow of Reverie Restaurant and Bar Sparrow, is back on Foodie and the Beast after...
I feel like you should totally do that in a different way.
He's back.
He's back.
That's right, boys and girls.
Your mic
it's
is
Johnny
not
Sparrow.
On yet, Johnny. We're still in introductions.
All right.
Go ahead.
That's right. But he survived a huge fire that took out his Michelin-starred tasting experience in Georgetown. The restaurant is back. We're going to hear about that and his kids and all kinds of crazy stuff, I'm sure. And if you've been living under a rock and you don't know anything about Georgetown's fashionable French restaurant, L'Avant-Garde D.C., hang on, because you're about to. Chef partner Sebastian Giannini, who is French but has an Italian last name, Accidenti, okay. He's going to take us into the kitchen and through the menu.
Well, because there's been some changes. I think you've missed a very important component.
Have I?
The restaurant opened. It started with a new chef and a new concept. Sebastian has gone in and changed it all up, and now it's even more fabulous.
He's a take-charge dude.
Yes. Next.
All right, and Nikki mentioned Lamb Jam. Lamb Jam is a blast. It's back. It makes my mouth water just to think about it. Lamb Jam Month celebrates the culinary creativity of chefs around the country. And so there are lamb cooking contests all over the country. And the winners compete for the title of Lamb Jam Master in their city. And then nationally, we've got the folks from Martha Deer and Mount Pleasant with us. Dimitri Michelis, who's the chef owner, and his wife, Tara Smith, who really runs things, right, Tara?
Okay.
Yeah, they're in to talk about it.
She's been in the hospitality industry for quite a while.
Tara's
the bomb.
She's a tough chick, I can
But
tell
also,
that.
I want to add, before we get into everything, we've been having a really interesting conversation in studio about what fine dining is, and if we have time at the end of the show, maybe we'll open it up to a little bit of a panel and sort of hash that out.
I think we can find 2 or 3 minutes
okay.
for that. All right, so James Cow, step up to that. You are stepped up to the microphone.
Hey, James.
Hello, how are you? Thanks for having me.
So, James, tell us a little bit about Smoke and Mirrors. Give us the vibe, the feel. Tell us what's happening there.
We're located in... we are located in an AC Hotel on top overlooking Capitol Hill.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great vibe with great seating, outdoor patio, multiple cocktails, great modern Americana.
Well, tell us a little bit about the cocktail menu.
So we make everything in-house as far as like syrups. I personally came up with a menu where I use fresh ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my cocktails takes about a day to make.
Excellent. Okay, so what cocktail are you making for us first?
The first one I'm making is Monroe's Love Letter. It's basically a variation of the Cosmopolitan.
Mm.
So instead of cranberry juice, I make a house-made spiced cranberry syrup. And instead of triple sec, I use a bergamot liqueur from Italy.
Excellent. Okay, you get to making that, and we're going to get
to
our first guest.
We're going to talk to Johnny Sparrow, who's chef owner at Reverie Restaurant and Bar Sparrow, and... You folks may remember hearing about the fire that took out Reverie, and I remember about Reverie is that it top three ribeye in my life.
I know, but he doesn't do it anymore.
I know, well, but I, what's the matter with you?
I mean,
look at me. Look at me. What's the matter for you?
There's a list of things that are wrong.
All right, but that steak was, yeah. I swear to God.
It we love that steak.
Yeah. I mean, we still, so when we started kind of changing things up during COVID, we had an opportunity to kind of like redevelop the restaurant. We tried to be something for everybody, and it just wasn't healthy for the restaurant. It wasn't working. We had like 70 seats in a 2,000 square foot space, but when we opened Bar Spiro, we kind of started playing in two different sandboxes. So like that steak moved its way.
Didn't
over
we
there.
Have it at Bar Spiro too? Didn't yeah. we have what steak did we
well,
have?
We had, there was the beef rib. We had the steak. So
do
we
think
played
he
with that
remembers
a lot more.
Exactly what you ordered for
I
dinner when
everything.
He was
he
at
does
Bar
because
Spiro?
Johnny knows everything about me.
Yeah,
he has my autograph
okay,
on his.
Okay, well, I want to back up
something. I guess we can't say that on air, right? I've been told to hold back
on
his
stuff. Blank.
All right. Yeah. Gentlemen,
yes,
I'm breaking
yes,
you
ma'am.
Up. Yeah. Okay, so
will you put us next to each other?
I know
my
that
fault.
Is my fault. Lesson learned. Okay, so let's talk a little bit. Let's just give everybody sort of
sure.
the 411 on Bar Spiro, the feel, the vibe, and what's going on there, and then we can dive into Reverie because
sure.
there was a fire, and you sort of changed the concept and changed what you're doing there.
Yeah. So in the middle of COVID, like we said, we went a lot of different ways, and Bar Spiro kind of came from a small little pop-up that we did on the patio when we weren't allowed to do indoor dining.
Sure.
It's inspired by my time in Basque Country. I'll never say it's Spanish food, but like the cooking over open fire, very seafood driven, that was what kind of pushed that concept. So everything's cooked over the open hearth.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a vegetable or a meat, at some point throughout the day, it's found its way onto the fire. So it's like our seasoning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the vibe is very different than Reverie. I mean, physically, the building is entirely different. We're smack dab in the middle of, you know, downtown, like 3rd and Mass, 30-foot ceilings.
Oh, no, the space is large.
Yeah.
How many seats is that?
It's 70 in the dining room with a little over 20 in the bar. It is very
well, it's spacious.
Yeah,
maybe, like, it has a very spacious
yeah,
feel.
Yeah, I think having the massive ceilings and, you know, the floor-to-ceiling windows makes
mm-hmm.
it feel, you know, it's huge. I mean, when we have, you know, 100-plus people in there, it doesn't feel crowded, which is great. And, like, we can never do that at Reverie. I mean, Reverie is, like,
it's
you can fit
impact.
you can fit three Reveries and probably stack them up.
Yeah, but I like that.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, it's like we wanted to have like complete opposite ends of the spectrum when it came to the restaurant spaces. Like that space came and it was like, okay, Bar Spiro can be larger, louder, and a bigger vibe. And Reverie, which had transitioned to,
and I think you
yeah.
could say check
yeah.
on that, right?
Yeah, we hit that one. Yeah.
Well, I mean, can we talk a little bit, step back a little about you? You're a James Beard Award winner.
No.
No.
No, why would you
were.
Say that?
That's
no.
He was nominated.
Oh, you
no.
were nominated.
Okay. No. I've never been nominated.
You got a Michelin star. Well,
I got a Michelin star.
I got news for you. It's in your stuff here. But
oh, I guess the Bar Spiro was nominated for one of like a best new restaurant.
All right.
First
so
year opening,
yeah,
but yeah,
so that but my point is you're a relatively young guy.
Yeah.
Getting older by the day, by I should add.
I know the gray's coming
I
through
see
a
the
lot
gray.
More. Yeah.
But you know, I
me
mean
too.
You started off I mean you're one of those people. We know another guy who's out on the West Coast. You were just born to do this. You started staging when you
all
were
I've done when I,
like
I was
still
13.
In utero, and
yeah.
you went to NoMa, which is I mean,
yeah.
if you're gonna stage somewhere, that ain't bad.
Yeah, might as well do that. Yeah, that was like the first I think big thing I did when like 14 years ago. I left Comey, and I went to Europe thinking I was never gonna come back. And then you know when you're not getting paid, the $1,000 you saved up doesn't last very long.
But what drives you? You know, you had a fire at Reverie. You could have
yeah.
taken the insurance money and licked your wounds and gone away. I mean, you're
yeah.
you're an animal.
I feel
animal.
Like you're jumping all over the place.
I don't care.
I have
mean,
ADD,
he's an
I have ADD
guy.
So I'm tracking this pretty well. This is
okay.
Why
I mean,
I'm
I feel like we're like pinging.
That's
like,
why you should be quiet, Nikki.
Okay,
no,
yeah.
all right.
But I mean, you know,
I mean,
you're...
I tell a lot of people I'm too dumb and stubborn to stop. I mean, I invested so much of like myself into... I mean, I started... Reverie in 2016. Like
right.
That's when we found the space. It took me 2 years to build it. I watched my daughter was born 10 days after that restaurant. Like I had to beg, borrow, and steal to get it open. So like just to like let it go after we finally saw a light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, opening a restaurant for the first year is always terrible. And then you jump into COVID and then you jump into like a little bit of what you could see is like a little bit of success. And then it's kind of like taken away from you. I'm like, no, like I'm not going to stop.
Well,
so with yeah. Reverie, what was the switch? So you started more a la carte. Right?
Yeah,
we're talking steak, and now you're
yeah.
all seafood, and it's a tasting menu.
Yeah.
And I think you're seeing restaurants around the area, like Tail Up Go, we were talking about it earlier,
yeah.
like that are going to a tasting menu concept.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit.
I mean, yeah, pre-fee and tasting kind of, I think, started making more sense for a lot of restaurants when they just... It gives us more control. It's not we have more control over you, but we have more control over our costs. Like,
right, of course.
Operating at a restaurant, I can tell you, is not... you know, you don't always make a ton of money doing it. Like, that's not why we do it.
But do you find resistance to tasting menus? Because, in other words, if I've had it on a Saturday night,
sure.
If I come back and I want to come back in 2 or 3 weeks, am I going to get the same thing? And maybe I don't want the same thing.
I mean, not a reverie. I mean, again, we recognize that having two different restaurants kind of feed two different styles of dining. Like, Bar Spiro could be once a month. Reverie might be like twice a year, if that, if we're lucky to have you in there. And with it only being 30 seats, we have like the unique opportunity to kind of do that. But we also changed the I told them the first 2 weeks of Reverie reopening, I was not going to touch the menu. And then after the 2 week window, I was like, all right, I said it. Now everything's changing. So we, I mean, also with being seafood, again,
it feeds, have to be seasonal it feeds with
into
seafood.
My, yeah, it feeds into my ADD. And it's not even just about the season. It's like, if it's too windy, they can't pull up the traps to get the crap or whatever they're going to get. So, like, we have to change on a whim and,
sure.
And be ready to go, like, all right, if we're not going to get this in, we're going to do it this way. So every day is a little bit different. Like, we were supposed to get black cod in from California from our friend Stephanie, who hand dives, like, for our, like, sea urchin and all kinds of fun stuff for us. She's like, she sent me a message at 3 o'clock in the morning, my time, which I don't know. Yeah, she's on the West Coast. So she's like, it's too windy. I'm not getting that fish. I was like, okay. So we moved into a different direction.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's a great story. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When
of
we
course.
Come back, we're going to talk a little bit more with Johnny Spiro. This is David and Nikki Nellis, Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Okay, so anybody who knows me knows that if it's sports, I will watch it on TV, except for cricket. I don't do cricket. But I love going to watch my sports at Nick's Riverside Grill in Georgetown. It's fabulous. They've got 21 TV screens down there. They've got a great selection of beers. The food is terrific. They've got a dish called the Crazy Big Nachos that is exactly as described, and a Detroit-style deep dish pizza that's just nuts. And there's nothing like watching a game, stuffing your face with a bunch of people that are enjoying it just like you are. Nick's Riverside Grill in Georgetown. If you love sports and you love fun food, go there. Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, talking to chef, owner Johnny Spiro of Reverie and Bar Spiro. Where'd we leave off?
We left off with seafood. And
yes.
You actually gave a terrific opening. Like, you have somebody named Stephanie who goes diving for your
cod.
Urchin. So can we talk about how you have been sourcing the people who service the restaurant?
Yeah. I mean, so our main focus is like East Coast, New England, but we also do have a couple of friends that we met during our travels. So when we had the Reverie Fire, we took Reverie on the road once a month for like 8 months straight. We did a dinner all over the world from like Kyoto, Seoul, went to West Coast a bunch. But we met this woman when we were doing a dinner in Los Angeles.
Wait, is this schlepping kids too, doing all that?
No. We did one dinner with the kids where I drove from D.C. To Portland, Maine with all three kids, like almost a newborn with my wife. I'm like, oh, I'll be like a little vacation. I'm like, no, I still work 6 hours.
He arrived in Portland with a gun in his mouth. And
no one slept the entire ride. We were up straight. And then there was a picture of like, I was just like collapsed on the floor like at 5 o'clock in the morning when we finally got there.
But
it was me, my sous chef, and one of my managers for the most part. But we would be gone for a week at a time. But we were in Los Alamos, like Los Olivos area of California. And we met this woman, Stephanie, who hand dives for sea urchin for a bunch of places out there. I mean, she gets her stuff's incredible because a lot of it's all everyone else gets the same stuff from the ocean, but it's how it's treated when it comes out. That's the big difference in all quality of seafood mainly. But we had like an awesome conversation. We were just talking about, you know, sea cucumber, sea urchin, you know, abalone, all this stuff. And she is working with one of my purveyors here on the East Coast to bring it over. So we'll get abalone that's pulled out of the water and just straight into a box into us. And it's like, it's kicking. Like, it's not living in a tank for, you know, for a week and dying. But we talk about like luxury ingredients for like what Reverie is. It's not just about, you know, lobs of caviar and stuff like that. It's those relationships where I can call my guy Will from Inland. He works for a company called Inland Seafood, Inland Lobster. Will Sullivan will call me. He actually just texted me before I got here asking if I wanted some mackerel. But we are constantly changing our menu based on the random text messages I get at 7 in the morning, and that determines how we go.
Well, can we just talk about how that winds up getting executed? So
yeah.
So how many courses are we talking about?
10 to 16, depending on how I'm feeling that day.
Okay, so 10 to 16 courses.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you get a text this morning, I'm getting some mackerel. So does your brain start going, okay, I know what I want to do with it? Do you have to think about the other ingredients? Like, walk us a little bit through the process.
Well, I've had to kind of change my creative process for a while. Like, I used to always think that I knew the dish that I wanted, and I recognized by like trying to just to push to that one outcome, you kind of miss every other variable that could kind of come into place. So when we think about the ingredient, we think about the best way to cook it. And then through like the database of stuff that we've kind of created over, you know, decades of cooking, we can kind of bring it together. Because I know what I like my food to taste like, and I know how to kind of bring a lot of that flavor together. But I try not to limit the outcome of what something could be by knowing I'm like, I am only going to do it this way. So we'll grill it, braise it, cook it, fry it, whatever it may be, whatever works.
How many guys are in the kitchen with you? Because I feel like to execute that many courses, you need a team.
I mean, including myself, me, my head chef, Rally, I have two sous chefs and like four cooks, but that's also mixed between AM and PM. So we have a team that starts at 8 in the morning, and it's two of them with, right now it's currently my head chef, Rally, is opening the restaurant at 8 with them to get prep. So three, they're basically prepping all day. The rest of our cooks come in around like 1:30 or 2, and like I'm in there, you know, anywhere between
just 8 to 10.
Just
go in and see all the plateware, like 12 to 16 courses. I'm like, how many plates is that? That's a lot.
I mean, we have it's a lot. We have two different friends that made all of our ceramics for our restaurant, but it's a lot. But it starts with I'll never bury cooks with like a new dish, so I'll do all the prep and all the mise en place for it until it's like 100% ready to go, and then we'll put that into the system because we've become way more organized. The only way you can do a menu like the way that we do it and do it well and consistent is to have somebody that is very good at organizing and implementing that. So I have ADD, I'm the creative, and I know I'm the business owner, and I have to like wear that hat too. But Rally, my head chef, can take my dream and help turn it into a reality, because it's not just about the idea, it's about making the idea happen. And everybody has ideas of what they want to do.
You mean a Rally-ality?
Yeah.
Okay, but you also have the other restaurant. So are you popping to both?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm still kind of a cool dad. I have a motorcycle that I'll ride back and forth between the two.
Okay. So you're a self-proclaimed cool dad.
Yeah.
I like where you're
exactly.
going.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I've been called worse, so I think just calling that myself is okay. But
I mean, I called you worse myself.
Yeah.
Right?
We just had a conversation out there. You're being kind of a jerk.
All right. We gotta go. Yeah. Johnny, tell everybody where the two restaurants are and how to find
Reverie
you
Restaurant
guys
is in Georgetown, off of Cherry Hill Lane, and Bar Spiro is down at 3rd and Mass. I'm at both restaurants at the same time every single day.
What are the days for Reverie?
Reverie is closed Sunday, Monday. And Bar Spiro is every day. Both dinner only. A la carte at Bar Spiro, focusing on hearth-driven cuisine. And Reverie is my seafood-focused tasting menu experience.
Excellent. Wow. And we're going to have you hang out because we're going to do a little panel discussion at the end. No, you can stay there.
No, I'm sending James back to the microphone.
Okay. James, this cocktail was really delicious.
Thank you.
Did everybody enjoy it, for those of us who are drinking in studio today?
Whoa.
So tell us how you, do you have a team that you get creative with to, come up with your cocktails?
No, relatively, I try to teach my up-and-coming bartenders. So basically, when we first started out, we didn't really have a full cocktail program. So I wanted to bring, real bartending into, the craft into it.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much make everything find fresh local ingredients, and then,
So do you guys do, weekly or monthly chemistry lab sessions where everybody gets around and throws out ideas and...
They bring any kind of ideas to the table, and then, I source it and then try to make it happen for them.
Cool. Excellent. Okay, what are you making next?
Next, I will be making Punch in the Clock. It's basically a tiki-style cocktail made with a Bacardi 4-Year rum. I also use a apricot liqueur. And a pineapple syrup, which I freshly grilled. And then I added almost like a spiced tea to it using Szechuan peppercorn, black peppercorn, and a little bit of Thai chili.
Oh, gorgeous. All right, get to it. Mix that
up. All right, and our next guest, we love everybody, but this is a guy that I love.
Why
he has
do
an
love
Italian
me?
Last name. Sebastian Giannini is the chef partner at Georgetown's very fashionable, very elegant, L'Avant-Garde DC.
Yeah, well, you haven't seen it since it's been shushed up. So, you're talking like you've been there recently.
I'm sure you're going to, thanks for the put down.
Yes,
and,
you're welcome.
I'm sure you're going to tell us about it.
Mm-hmm.
But are you related to Giancarlo Giannini? That's the most important.
No.
No.
All right, get off the show. Okay. All right, Nikki, go ahead.
Well, so, Chef, you've been on before because you've been at several places around town.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think when we talked to you last. I think during the pandemic, you were executing out of the Four Seasons.
Yes.
And then what brought you to L'Avant-Garde? Let's talk a little bit about the history. We never had anybody on the show from L'Avant-Garde when they first opened, but it sort of opened with a bit of a splash, and then it went with a little bit of a I don't know what happened. No, I mean, it's a beautiful space, but like, I don't know what happened there. So what happened and how'd you wind up taking over? What can you tell us? Off the record, nobody's listening.
No, look at that. You know, after the wonderful four seasons, I take 3 years, you know, to stay with my wife and the kids and to become, you know, a private chef. It was a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were looking to bought a restaurant, especially in Georgetown, because we love, you know, the area. Mm-hmm. And we have the proposition to become partners, you know, in this restaurant.
But
this
did you see something that was going on there? Like, did you, and I'm going to mention your wife, Anina Bell, who's in studio with us. Did you all go in there and see, this is the concept, did you see what they were doing and think, I can make this better, I can make this sing? Or did you have a concept in your mind and you were just looking for a place to execute? Thank you.
No, you know that I'm somebody very pragmatic and simple, you know, and to say that I will do better, it's a lot to say that.
Okay, but I think Johnny Spiro would say that, but go ahead.
We love the place and the area, you know, and this is why... we decide to say less. This is a go, you know, because it's close to the Four Seasons, you know. It's close of the place we like, you know, and we say, why not? And now we are here.
Wow, that's amazing. So how do you go into L'Avant-Garde and make it yours? Like, it had a concept. It was, you know, there was a lot of, like, buzz terms and Michelin star this and blah, 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 and fine dining, all these things. And how did you go in and make it yours? And what can people expect there now?
You need to have this approachable, you know, in Georgetown, because you want to come at lunch with your kids, you know, for a nice Niçoise salad.
Well, especially with tourists.
Or you came, you know, on Friday, you know, for a date night, you know, with your wife. Mm-hmm. If your schedule, you know, can do it and you enjoy, you know, a nice seafood tower or, you know, a nice piece of beef, I think we are more approachable now.
So how would you describe the concept?
It's kissed, you know, by the sun of the French Riviera. It's very essential, you know, for me, because this is a base with a lot of seafood, you know, a lot of fish. You have a lot of citrus. Mm-hmm. And, it's more light, you know, on the execution.
Okay. And so are you open for lunch now?
Yes.
Wow. Because the place was not open for lunch. And, yes. I mean, Georgetown needs more places for lunch. So how do you go about hitting the kinds of dishes you want to do, because there's a lot of tourists and students in Georgetown, and also the people who are looking for maybe that a touch of elevated dining. How do you combine the two?
You have a different menu, you know, lunch and dinner. This is very important for us. You know, it's more executed on a salad, you know, with a nice branzino on the lunch, you know, and after on the night, it's a smaller portion, and I want to say like foie gras, red mullet, red scorpion fish, you know, bouillabaisse. Mm-hmm. It's completely different.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I want to talk about something very important.
Okay.
Always.
Salade niçoise.
Ah.
All right.
Okay.
So in America, you can get it almost with a hamburger on top. I mean, they make it with potatoes. They make it with green beans. What is the classic? This has bothered me for years.
Yes, I mean, he wakes up in the middle of the night.
And like, I go... Perspectivo. By the way, what's in a salad niçoise?
I married my wonderful wife, you know, in Nice. And the niçoise is very important for us because I was executive chef at Le Méridien Nice, the biggest hotel on the Riviera.
Right.
And the niçoise, you know, it's very on the culture, very important. You cannot change it. Even if I live in south of France in Toulon, 1 hour from Nice, aye. You need to follow the rule, or you know you are not from Nice anymore.
Okay.
This is why
that would not be nice.
We don't have potatoes and French beans, you know, on the niçoise, not at all.
So why do people do that?
The story, you know, was that the fishermen, you know, that they finish, you know, the day of work and they bring, you know, the belly of the tuna, you know, to the monk in Nice in exchange, you know, of the fresh vegetables, you know, of the season. Mm. This is why, you know, you still have the small olive pecholine, the artichokes, les petits gris, you know, a little bit of the red bell pepper, the tomatoes, cucumber. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, if you were rich at the time, you put some fava beans. You know, it was, ooh, a big day. It's true. And after, you know, you have the tuna belly that it's cooked in olive oil, you know, the niçoise, the Nice olive oil.
So is it a confit of tuna?
Yes, it's confit, mm-hmm. always. And the more important is that the citrus on it. Mm-hmm. the citrus is that the lemon zest, the candied orange, you know, and the fennel pollen. Fennel pollen is give you a little bit of the kick, you know.
Wait, is fennel pollen yours or is fennel pollen classic to the Niçoise?
It's fennel pollen classic to the Niçoise.
It is. Okay, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to dig in a little deeper. This is David and Nikki Nellis, Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Chef Sebastian Giannini of L'Avant-Garde in Georgetown, delving into the mysteries of the Salade Niçoise.
But I also, so you mentioned bouillabaisse earlier.
Yes.
Can you tell us what the classic bouillabaisse is that you're serving in your restaurant?
Yeah, that's another thing that gets played with.
Do you play a little bit with that as well? Or you're like, no. I stick to the classics.
I can't play with that. This is a recipe of my grandmother, Pierrette.
Okay.
You know, she lives, 2 years ago, but I still, keep the memory of the bouillabaisse. And the base, it's always with red mullet, red scorpion fish, lobster, tomato paste, little bit, Ricard, the alcohol, you cannot change this.
Uh-huh.
And, the green of the leeks, with the baby fennel. When you have this base, you say you are very strong. The secret of the bouillabaisse, it's always, to recook it every day with the new carcass, that we call the new shell of lobster, and all of the fishes, and we keep it every day alive.
Mm.
When you have this base, you have this wonderful gold color that you have a little bit of red on it, and when you pour it, and you eat this with a potato tournée that you cook a little bit in saffron,
Oh my God, I'm so hungry right now. Yeah. Well, I'm so hungry.
Let's talk about another, driving issue here, and that's fennel.
Yes.
In America, I never had fennel before I went to live in Italy a million years ago.
Like in the 70s.
And yeah, like the 1870s.
I wasn't born yet.
And in the 1770s.
I just want to be clear.
But it's extraordinary. It's, it looks like celery, but it's got a licorice taste.
Yes.
Just chopped up and sautéed with butter and salt and pepper, it'd knock you out. I'm starting to see it on menus now and starting to see it sort of work its way in, but Americans have never really been
I totally disagree with that assessment.
No,
I don't think
fennel's been on every... When was the last time you went to sort of a mainstream restaurant and saw fennel as part
of fennel is on so many menus. I think you... I can't even imagine how wrong you are.
Only discerning chefs.
Okay, I
Johnny
disagree.
Sparrow hates fennel. No. He said so. He said F's fennel, actually.
Okay, so is there a question there? Do you have a question?
I mean, where do you stand on fennel, and do your guests, does everybody just accept it and eat it when it's in?
Yes, everybody, accept it and love it, and for me, born and raised, in south of France, we grew up with that, it's not a question to say, do you like it or not? You have no choice,
Right.
You go on the market, with your grandmother, and you smell, everything on the etal,
so
and you say, today we are going to eat branzino, a little bit on the oven with the lemon, olive oil, fleur de sel, and the breast fennel.
Mm.
Little bit of orange juice, on the fennel at the end.
I'm slobbering.
And, you don't say anything, because you are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, and you can have a little bit of Ricard on your fennel with orange. It's a special day on the Sunday. This is why we love it.
I love it. Okay. We are going to come back to you at the end because we're going to do a little panel discussion. But tell everybody, please, where we can find L'Avant-Garde and where we can find you either online or Insta.
We can find, L'Avant-Garde 2019-15, in front of the Four Saisons in Georgetown. And on Instagram, it's Le Chef Sébastien or Le Chef's Wife because my wife, take care of everything on this.
Yes, well, everybody should see Anina Bell's Instagram because she does incredible cooking tutorials about cooking for her children and her family on Instagram too. So it's
and Mother's Day is coming. So
yes. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you so much.
All right, James Cow. Let's talk more about
this.
Smoke
is so
and
nice and spicy. Everybody should go grab one so you can taste it. They're delicious.
Mm.
Nice and spicy. Light and nice and spicy.
Ooh,
there you go. Okay, so James, let's talk about what's coming up next. What are you making next for us?
Next is basically a margarita-style cocktail.
Cinco de Mayo. That makes sense.
So I use a reposado from Patron.
Mm-hmm.
I also use a gombriere, which consists of fresh rose petals and made of sugar beets as a liqueur.
Mm-hmm.
It's a product of France. France, and I use a little bit of tiki bills, just add a little spice to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we also put in like a little smoke box, so it is a smoke cocktail.
Oh, are really we smoking in studio? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, if I can.
Okay, can we? Yes, we can. Andy says we can, so go to it.
Okay. Wait, what are we smoking?
Smoking
something good?
Yeah.
Basically, the cocktail. He's smoking the cocktail.
I thought we were going to get high. Okay. All right.
No, that was 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I see. That's it. All right. Okay. Well, while we're doing that, we've got Dimitri Michelis. He's in with us. And
his wife, Tara.
His wife, Tara's here. They're chefs. He's the chef, and they are co-owners of Martha Deer in Mount Pleasant. But we're talking about...
We're not going to get into lamb jam yet. I want to talk about Martha Deer because we've never had you guys on the
show.
You
never allowed me. See, this is what's wrong with our marriage because I never get to finish
the
sentence.
Where to begin? Okay.
I said we want to talk about lamb jam, but first we want to hear about Martha Deer.
Okay. Great.
Okay, so tell us, man.
Hey there. So Martha Deer, we are a pizzeria in Mount Pleasant. We specialize in sourdough pizza, 12-inch Neapolitan-style sourdough pizza. And we also serve Greek-inspired, Mediterranean-inspired salads and specials and side
dishes. Well, can we talk about the sourdough pizza? Like, what got you into sourdough pizza? Why sourdough specifically? Where's your starter from? Like, I have so many questions.
Sourdough, that happened years ago when I was working in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Actually just because it's the harder way to do everything, like, truthfully.
Why? What makes it harder?
I mean, he can probably speak a little bit more to that, but I think it's just pizza is ubiquitous, right? Like, everybody has a touchstone moment with pizza, and they can understand pizza, but sourdough makes it, like, kind of the chef-y version of pizza, in my opinion. The dough itself can be different from day to day. Like,
well, because it's a living, breathing thing.
Exactly.
Right. Totally get that.
So, and he doesn't, you know, use one flour.
Well, can
he
you explain on sourdough? I mean, when you make, because I'm not a cook.
No, we all
I'm
know
not
that.
A baker.
We got it.
I confess. But when you're making the dough, could it be, when you got it in front of you, say, well, we can make, this could be bread or this could be our pizza. I mean, are there the nuances to the pizza dough that you wouldn't find in a bread?
They're very similar. Very similar.
Okay, so what are the nuances? Inquiring minds.
I mean, it's the same four ingredients, right? It's
right.
Your natural
so
levain, your salt, your water, and your
yes.
flour.
Okay.
It's ratios that are kind of different.
So what was it? So is as a sourdough pizza crust, it's fermented. So does that change the health qualities of the crust? Because it's a fermented process? Because, like, sourdough is a more digestible
Exactly. It does make
component.
It easier to digest.
Right?
It's not entirely gluten-free. In fact, you know, the makeup of our restaurant, like, we cook in the main room. So if you have a gluten intolerance, we're
don't come.
Definitely not the best
right,
place
please don't
for
come.
You.
Please don't come.
No, we're here for you, but we just can't guarantee that there's not flour in the air to
right.
shape the dough in the main space. But it does... the dough that he is using makes it much more digestible for folks that have some gluten intolerance.
Okay, and then let's talk about the pizzas in general. What was it that you were looking to put on the pizzas? What were the flavor profiles? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so some of the pizzas I wanted to keep classic, but mostly I wanted to put my Greek heritage spin on most of our pies.
Okay. So,
like
how does what does that look
pizza
like?
Pizza is like kefalo graviera. It's you know, salty kind of Gruyere style cheese.
Well, why is that? Did you grow? I mean, are your parents?
He's first Greek.
Generation?
I'm just a passionate.
I know
Greek
he's
man.
Greek.
He's Greek.
Michelis.
Dimitri.
I got to put my spin, my Greek spin on it.
So, but I mean, did you when you were a kid? Were you in the kitchen with your mother or your grandma?
I did grow up in the business. Yeah, my family had a Greek restaurant 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 12 years old, bussing tables, dishwashing on the weekend. So I kind of grew up with that. You know, environment.
The restaurant's also named after his mom.
Yeah.
So, like, in, like, the namesake there. And, the,
and let's clear that up. It's not Martha, my dear, like the Beatles. It's Martha, dear.
Martha,
like
dear, because my mother-in-law is the sweetest person you'll meet.
Aww, I love that.
Are you trying to curry favor, Tara?
I don't need to.
Just because this is on the radio? Okay.
So, now, you told me before we got on air that it's not a classic kitchen.
No.
So, you have the... pizza oven, you have a big use gas, but a pizza oven, and you can put dishes in there to stay warm, but all the other things are not sort of cooked, right?
Yeah, mostly cold or room temp.
Okay, and what are the sort of side plates that you have there?
We do.
Do you do a salad niçoise? I'm sort of curious.
We do have a calamata olives.
You're in a boatload of trouble here, dude.
No,
very similar to the niçoise.
Break the. I just refer to it lovingly as the left-hand side of the menu, which mm-hmm. I don't think anyone should skip, even though we're known for pizzas. We break it down into snacks, some salads, and then, because you need a catch-all always on a menu, the not-pizza section. I would say we are probably, after pizzas, best known for our Caesar salad. It's huge, large, has white anchovies. We'll take mm-hmm. them off if you don't like them, but we can't take them out of the dressing.
Yeah. Right.
And then we do have other warm plates. He's doing an eggplant papuzaki, which is like stuffed eggplant currently. But in general, we try to make some. We focus on our love of sourdough. So you've got some dips with pitas on the side. Mm-hmm. You've got sourdough breadcrumb on your Caesar. You have. We always have beans. That's a staple in. A Greek family, mm-hmm. And then we do focaccia as well.
So do you run the risk, that's a pretty interesting not pizza side, the risk of being sort of stereotyped as a pizza restaurant and having people who really don't dig in think, well, I'm not up for pizza tonight.
I guess I'd kind of flip it the other way. I think pizza brings people in, and then we love it. We have this whole other side of the menu that makes them stay or come back. So
I love that. I think that makes a lot of sense. Smart. And then why participate in something like Lamb Jam?
I love lamb.
Okay.
It was a great opportunity to showcase, what I like to cook.
And so when it comes to lamb, how do you like to cook it? What do you like to cook?
At the restaurant right now, we're braising because that's all I can do. I don't have a grill, or I can't do like lamb chops and stuff like that, but right now we're doing like a pressed lamb slider on a sourdough brioche bun.
Mm-hmm.
So we're using the sourdough aspect and doing Greek style braised lamb.
He generally braises lamb and either picks it or pulls it and then finds another way to make it his own given the limitations of our kitchen. So last year with the dish that he won for, it was a lamb and hummus, but the lamb got this almost caramelized texture to it after he tossed it in a date chutney. We still have people that are coming in and asking for that dish, even though it's been off the menu for at least 8 months.
I have to say, for me, there's nothing better than lamb ribs.
David is a lamb
ribs. So,
oh my God.
So what's the competition like for you? Are you like Dukes up? You ready to win? Like, it's a competition, dude.
It is. I mean, I'm just having
you're
a good
so
time.
You're so like blasé. No.
You're so blasé, you're almost blaze. That's right. So
I just try not to worry about that stuff.
Last year, I think we were new to it. We didn't really know what we were getting ourselves into, and it was really a wonderful surprise to be crowned the
Lamb Master.
The Lamb Master, or as our friends love to say, I don't know if we're allowed to say this on air, but the Lamb Daddy.
We can say the Lamb Daddy.
Yeah, you're allowed to say that.
This year, I'd say we're maybe taking it like a teeny tiny bit more seriously. Like the staff know about it. We're talking about it a little bit more with guests. We're putting it on our social media a little bit more.
Okay, great.
And I love the dish that he's doing this year.
I think Dimitri's got sort of a Ray Romano vibe. There's a lot going on under the surface.
He likes to compare people to other people, and I just don't get it.
Like Romano. I like Ray Romano.
Yeah,
okay,
I know
good.
You do,
he's happy with it? Great. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a quick break. Yes, Andy, we're taking a quick break.
We're taking a break.
This is David and Nikki Nellis, Foodie and the Beast. We're going to do a little panel on fine dining and what that means to each of the people in studio today and how it's being executed in their restaurants or not. We'll be back in just a sec.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis talking to Dimitri Michelis and Tara. Tara, is your last name Michelis?
No, it's Smith.
Smith.
That will get me in trouble.
That's a likely name. That's a likely name. Anyways, about their restaurant, Martha Deer, and really about Lamb Jam. You are laid back, dude, but I can tell you're a real competitor.
So what are you making for Lamb Jam?
And what's the name of the dish?
Pressed lamb slider. So it's a sourdough brioche bun that we make in-house, braised like a lamb that we press and then punch out, and we top it
with. What does that mean for the uninitiated? Press and punch out. What does that mean?
Just cook till tender, and then we pick all the meat and the fat, whatever, and all the good stuff. We just press it and season it, and when it's set, we just cut portions out of it.
Okay, great. Then how's it being topped?
Is that like making cookies?
It's getting garnished with a chickpea I guess, glazed chickpeas with the lamb jus, and then topped with Greek yogurt, and then a little herb salad with onions and mixed herbs and stuff.
Amazing. Yeah. And for people who are curious about lamb jam, just so you know, there are other chefs around the D.C. metro area who are participating. All that information is on the list, areyouonit.com. And there are secret judges who are going to these restaurants, and they are tasting these products, and then the winner of D.C. will then go up to New York to participate in a larger competition. But you, the consumer, can also participate, and you can vote online, and they can also win the People's Choice Award. So there's lots of fun ways to participate in Lamb Jam.
And we're not
year.
Saying who the secret judges are, but I do accept the cashier's check. I'm just saying. All right. So you want now you want to do a little chat around about fine dining.
Please let Chef and Tara tell everybody where they can find Martha Deer and where we can find you online or on Insta.
Martha Deer is located in Northwest D.C. in the Mount Pleasant neighborhood. We are kind of a little hidden away. We're on the lower level, kind of close to Irving and on Mount Pleasant.
I know, but you're on a block now that is just like it's every
jumping,
day.
Yeah.
Like there's so many new restaurants opening up there. It's just like a little neighborhood haven of good restaurants.
Mount Pleasant's always been like a sweetheart of a neighborhood, and it's just so exciting to see all of the things that are opening and how vibrant it is on the main street.
Great. And where do we find you on Insta?
MarthaDeer.com or MarthaDeerDC.
Okay. One of those. That's okay. All right, good. Okay, so prior to the show, we were talking about, well, actually, Tara, I think the conversation started out in the green room with David.
Johnny.
Right? About.
I was running my mouth.
Okay, run your mouth in the front of the mic.
No, you weren't running your mouth. I was complimenting you, and I called Reverie Fine Dining. And then I feel like there was a question thrown in about whether it was or not.
And we were talking about, and I said it, and I will go into it more because I will just talk very quickly. But we talked about fine dining. I said I don't typically like fine dining, and everyone's like, well, Reverie's a fine dining restaurant. And I think you can kind of compare it to music, right? You have like one specific genre, right? But then there's so many different subgenres in there. Mm-hmm. So there's room for everything. Like we have white tablecloths at Reverie, but I think we play like my music, so there's like weird post-hardcore stuff going on there too.
Is it ear deafening?
Huh?
Is it ear deafening?
I can hear you.
Is it in the music?
Yeah, there it is. Dad joke. I got three kids.
Okay.
No, it's not. It's at the right level.
Because you know that's kind of a new thing in some like more high end restaurants to play like I call it like kitchen music, like the hardest of rock, like war and stuff like that, like at ear deafening levels. And I'm always like, I do want it. I like music and I like it a lot as a compliment to my meal, but. Yeah. It shouldn't take over my meal.
It's like salt, right? Like too much is too much.
Exactly.
So if we have a lot of speakers in the restaurant. Not so it's loud, but so it's balanced. So that way everywhere you are, you can hear it, but it's not like destroying your eardrums. But when we talk, fine dining is not, it's not that we don't like it. I think there's just different ways that we can still create a really unique experience where guests are getting that same level of attention and detail and quality of product without it having to be like the
Persées
of the world, which is like, I love those dining experiences and they're super special, but not all of us want to play that in that same band. Like we have different styles of music that we want to play and still kind of speak to the same crowd.
Well, let's hear what Sebastian has to say.
Yeah, Sebastian, you've cooked all over the world and at a variety of restaurants. Where do you stand on sort of what fine dining is to you, and how do you relate it to the rest to L'Avant-Garde?
You know, the fine dining, we have the best experience with my wife when we celebrate our 27th birthday in, for example, in Monte Carlo, no, le Louis XV in Monte Carlo.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you know, we enjoy, you know, a nice salad niçoise and rosé at l'Hôtel du Cap, you know, the Eden Rock, you know, on the afternoon, you know. And I think, you know, between both of them, you have the place for the two.
Mm-hmm.
And fine dining is very important for the training, you know, in the big brigade, you know, in France, because we came from here, you know, we train hard. And I think, you know, the experience for the guests is very interesting because now you have a lot of restaurants of Yannick Aleno, of Alain Ducasse, you know, they propose, you know, what they call the fine dining, but it's different because you bring back, you know, the service of the Guéridon. You have more interaction with the guests, and we know what's happening in the kitchen because the kitchen came on the dining room, you know, and the interaction is different. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, if you want to have a casual restaurant or a pizzeria, everything, you know, I like it because, let's be honest, I like to have a pizza with my wife.
Right, well, you can have fine dining. Fine dining is special dining,
yes,
right? Like fine dining is, and again, with gradations, right? Yeah. Like taking gradations in mind. Like there is Johnny's kind of white tablecloth, which is a little more rock and roll, right? In his what he's doing and how he's doing it versus like a per se.
Well, but it's also speaking for the meatball consumer, which I am. I represent. I was nominated and elected. I mean, what was the name of the restaurant in Como?
Mistral.
Mm-hmm. Which is a Michelin-starred restaurant, you know, and it's
fine dining.
Fine dining across the board. Mm. But the staff was so, they were normal, you know, and they were friendly.
They were darling.
And they weren't stiff.
We're all pretty normal, I think.
Not you.
Yeah. No. I know what David is saying is that there was a time, and maybe it's been a generational shift with fine dining. There was a time that when you went to a fine dining restaurant that the service was
snooty.
Hospitable, but it was stiff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And they wouldn't give, if I wanted to talk to the som about wine, you know, they would keep looking at him because he's the man and I'm
the woman. And I don't know spit. So.
And he doesn't know anything about wine.
Clearly.
And do you know what I mean?
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. I resemble that remark.
I think it's changed, right? Like, I mean, we're still in the same service and we still care about the guest. And I think we have this like mentality that everybody deserves nice things, that we're not looking at you when you walk through the door. You're like, that guy, we're going to sell, you know, this bottle of wine. We're going to do this. Like, we want you to come in and feel
well,
welcome.
Honestly, it ruins my meal if when we sit down, everything's directed to me and I'm handed the wine list and I, you know, that
but
kind of stuff.
But to be fair, it also ruins his meal when everything is directed to me.
So it's a
no, I really don't care.
Yeah.
I don't really care. You step on my foot and my mouth opens. You can feed me anything. But I
think we all have that, but yeah, the approach, no matter what it is, from like casual fine dining, it's always about the guests and it's just how we kind of execute that. Like at Reverie, the cooks deliver every single plate. It's like, it's super beautiful and we engage and we have an amazing front of the house team. And I think it's just, again, we all kind of play in the same sandbox, just a little bit differently.
Well, and I want to bring in Tara because hospitality is hospitality,
yeah,
right?
I think one of the really interesting ways to maybe kind of break it down is that like fine dining, there's still like such incredible technique and attention and across the board, but in particular to the food and maybe the coursing menu and so much thought that's put in there. There's just as much thought or should be that's put into the service, but it could be a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more approachable, or at least in the genre of the restaurants that maybe I'm frequenting now that are considered fine dining. I said this earlier, but my favorite fine dining restaurants to go to have a little bit more of an unbuttoned approach to service,
right.
But that doesn't mean you're not hitting the marks, right? And it doesn't mean you're not paying attention to every detail.
Well, I mean, honestly, like I'm just going to throw the Inn at Little Washington out there before we wrap up, because even though it is a buttoned up fine dining, and I'm using quote fingers, experience, the servers are funny. Like, you know, the cheese guy, right? The cheese card. I mean, he's corny. He tells cheesy jokes.
Yeah.
Like, it's, there's a lightness. There's a lightheartedness to service because they know what they're serving is food.
One of the things I always tell my servers, and I am no longer running a fine dining.
Right, but you were a tail-up goat.
Yeah, no, but who I'm training now.
Right.
And, you know, all your experience carries with you is that, like, more you know, the more comfortable you are on the floor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the training that goes into the wine, the knowledge about the ingredients or, like, what allergens are in the food, it makes you so much more relaxed and in a way that you can engage. And I think that's what you're seeing in the attention to service. In
education.
Yeah. You're
educating your staff.
There's no reason to have, like, a wall between you and the guest because the servers are just as knowledgeable because people are paying time and attention to train them so that you can have that a little bit of breath.
Excellent. All right. We have to end the panel because we have to end the show.
I got more to say.
I know you do. Come on. Back up. Thank you so much for all the cocktails today. Tell everybody where we can find Smoke and Mirrors.
So we're 867 New Jersey Avenue in Southeast at the AC Marriott. And just look for us on the 11th floor.
Okay, great. And where can we find you on Instagram?
Smoke and Mirrors Rooftop.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right, quick wrap up.
All right. Well, I'm going to wrap up the way I always do. If anybody's paying attention to the news, the U.S. finally came across and is sending money to Ukraine. I saw in the news today, Russia's taken more territory, so the Ukrainians now will fight back. But there are still millions of refugees in and out of Ukraine that need help. And there are refugees in the Middle East, and there are refugees in Sudan. And, I mean, they're across the board. So I just ask everybody, instead of that one latte, maybe you send a couple of bucks to Red Cross, Red Crescent, to Jose, somewhere where it can do some good, and you know, we can live without our lattes one morning.
Okay, great. Thank you. And on that note, we want to thank everybody for being here in studio today. Always a good and interesting way to start off your Sunday. Everything you heard here today, you can find on the list or youonit.com, the online e-zine that tells you everything happening in the D.C. metro area. Don't forget, if you're looking for Cinco de Mayo celebrations, there are a ton, and they are all on the list. Of course, you want to follow me at NYCCINELLIS. On all the platforms, but on Insta, because you can see everything I'm doing. Again, thanks to all of our guests in studio today, and be safe out there and have a delicious week.